Good morning. What we know after three rounds of footy is any pecking order worth anything that doesn't have West Coast on top is completely flawed. Three wins over Collingwood at the MCG in 13 games surely puts the issue beyond debate. Who's going to beat the Eagles in Perth, let alone back at the MCG? Any appreciation of history tells you winning back-to-back flags is the most formidable challenge, so let's hold off on that. But the Eagles are the one seed and will remain so for the foreseeable future. The rest of the order is anyone's guess. The other three of last year's preliminary finalists are 2-7 combined. Melbourne's condemned to chase the season at 0-3. We're left clinging to the idea they're a good team. On the evidence presented, it's only a notion. On a day when Dustin Martin needed to step up and assume responsibility for his under-duress Tigers, he melted down. It was an unflattering reality for a player admired as one of the best in the game. He failed his team on the day, and should he be suspended, as seems likely, will harm their cause further still. The demise of the Tigers is unfolding before our startled eyes. The joy of Queensland footy is an unexpected delight. The Lions and Suns are 5-1 combined. Again, Brisbane stormed home from a losing position and the Suns look united, organised and inspired. Carlton, for the moment, suffers by comparison with both. The Blues can argue as much as they like against the idea they've forgotten how to win. Well, just show us. Just start winning like the Lions and the Suns are managing to do. And do it this week on the Gold Coast. There's the angst over contact below the knees and breaches of 666. Actually, there's angst over every part of the umpiring, full stop. We'll work through all of this in the means test with David King and plenty of your calls as the morning unfolds. We've got a major announcement coming after the first break, with an eye towards what's going to happen in the racing world on Saturday. So that just after 20 past nine will tell you what lies in store this weekend. But we start with Nathan Buckley. Collingwood's about to begin its review as to what unfolded on Saturday night against the Eagles as they came up short again. Nathan, good morning. Welcome back to SEN.
Jared, how are you?
Very well. So we've spoken about a lot has changed, and yet there's one thing that stays the same. Did we learn on the weekend that West Coast are still the best?
Well, they were clearly the premier team of last year, and you would have to be rating us as a major contender, which clearly you know, we'd like to be, and we believe we are. But yeah, they performed very well, and were able to meet any challenge that we threw at them on the evening, and leave us and everyone else, I suppose, with a little bit of catching up to do.
When you see a foe constantly, like you do with West Coast at the moment, is there any sense of frustration that comes when you're not able to sway things your way?
Oh, I suppose the fact that we played them three times so close together at the end of last year and then so early this year, I think it's easy to pack them into one set. Clearly, yeah, this game is quite separate, and potentially the grand final is quite separate from the other games. The first final is separate from the home and away, but as each step rose last year, they were just able to, we got better, but they were able to ultimately prevail, and I thought that there were some similar parts to the script in this year's game, but there were also some aspects that we improved on, but still fell short. So that's we take lessons from all of our games, and we need to improve consistently if we want to be where we want to be. But right now, as the music has stopped on round three, 2019, we've still got a bit of work to do.
Does Andrew Gaff make them substantially better?
He had a lot of the ball, but I wouldn't have thought. I think they are a heavily based system side, and they just happen to execute that system really well. I think Gaff has some amazing attributes that that will continue to blossom and shine in the AFL. There's no doubt that's a fact. And he was one of the best players in the field. But I don't necessarily see individuals as many do when I look at the best teams in the competition. I see how they combine together, and that was the reason for West Coast success last year. And Gaff or no Gaff, Nat Nui or no Nat Nui, and it'll be the reason for their success this year, regardless, or any other best teams for that matter.
When you put the review up today, Bucks, are there one or two things that you'll really focus on from the night?
Yeah, there will be. I think they have been able to sort of edge out our midfield. They haven't dominated our midfield, but they have been able to edge out our midfield through stoppage. So whether that's Brody, whether that's at ground level, whether that's the midfield is more than just the blokes that are in the centre square. It's the wingers, it's the high half forwards, the high half backs. So they have collectively been able to edge us out in the midfield consistently. So that has been a consistent part of our games against them. And at times we've looked really good in there. So it is a marginal thing, and it is marginal across the board, really, but that would be one aspect that will come up in review.
Have you had a look at the Taylor Adams bump, and do you have a feel for what will happen with the MRO today?
Yes, I've had a look at the Taylor Adams bump, and you could ask me about any one of 100 contests in the game or across the round, and my answer wouldn't be any different. It would be different, I suppose, but no, I don't see anything there that we would expect to hear about.
The preliminary finalists to last year are 4-8 Bucks, West Coast, Collingwood, Richmond and Melbourne. A couple of those, when you played each other, they had to be results. So what do you read into that?
Well, I think we've spoken about it the first couple of weeks. I mean, a lot can change in a short period of time or in an off-season, and plenty stays the same. So it's just a matter of what you expected, what confirmation bias you're looking for, or how knee-jerk you want to be with your reactions to where the best four sides of 2018 need to be or are going. But I think clearly everyone will have their prognostications on what that means and where it goes, but I just think it seems an interesting reality check, doesn't it, on what we believe to be true is not necessarily what is true, and you've got to take the evidence as it comes, and that's clearly been a strength of ours, and we've continually taken those learning opportunities and been prepared to implement them and try and look for that and work for that improvement in our football, which is we're in no different situation to where we were going to be, really, with a lot of work to do and a lot of improvement in us. So we're looking forward to that.
Do you keep an eye on the other teams there? Have you had a vague eye on Richmond or on Melbourne?
Well, we've played Richmond and clearly played West Coast. So we've seen two of the other four preliminary finalists, Melbourne being the other one. Watched the game against Essendon on Thursday night, so you sort of get a... Thursday night? Yeah, we get a bit of a sense.
Yeah.
Friday night. Get a sense on, I suppose, those two teams, and that was a pretty fast game. But, yeah, like as we've spoken about, the competition is marginal. The competition is fierce. The elite nature of it and the fact that over summer, none of the other 17 teams, nor were we sitting on our hands and thinking that we didn't want to get better or that we weren't working to improve. So I think the wider public are blind to that for the majority of it. I don't see too many people down in our pre-season training, so I presume that's pretty consistent with everyone else. And these things come to bear when you take the field in earnest in a home and away for premiership points. So we're into it. we're into it, and yeah, the season's on its way. It's and I think, you know, people would generally enjoy the fact that there's plenty of stories unfolding. There's plenty yet to be told, and generally that's why, you know, football is so compelling.
Do you expect it to be a volatile season?
Well, tell me what you mean by volatile, mate.
That teams will rise and teams will fall, and whatever expectations are will be turned on their head routinely.
Yeah, well, I think the competition's tight enough for that to occur. Opposite to volatile, maybe it's predictable. But it's just a matter of, you know, which the parts that are predictable is that there will be teams that underperform to expectations. There will be teams that overperform to expectation. And there'll be some that finish exactly where people expect them to, but I just can't tell you who they are.
Yep.
So in that sense, it might be volatile to one person's view of the way the world should be. And there's likely, if the competition is tight, there's very likely to be, there can be very large swings in a 2 or 3 week period, especially with such a small sample size. In 3 weeks' time, we'll double what we've witnessed to this point. And there's likely to be some pretty big shifts, but at the same time there'll be sides that have settled into where they've got to at the moment, depending on what they're able to execute in the next 3 weeks.
You've got the Western Bulldogs. They played the Suns. When you were watching that game yesterday, what did you make of the Suns, who must surely be the delightful surprise of the first 3 weeks?
Yeah, they look very organised. Their attack on the ball. They look hungry, so they look consistent across the field. You know, whether the ball's in their front half or their back half, they're getting good numbers to the contest, and they're just having a crack, which I think is evident, and that would be clearly something that they will be able to build on. The other thing was their aerial strength. They really look strong in the air. So that there's every team creates a personality of a type, a character of a type, and it gives them something to build on if they can recognise that. But I thought the Suns were really strong, and the Bulldogs have been in really good form, so it's a meritorious win for them.
The two rules out of the weekend that have been much discussed, are we at a point after 3 weeks where a free kick should be paid for a 666 infringement, accidental or deliberate?
We can't tell the difference between accidental and deliberate. So I think part of the job of the lawmakers is to create less, or is to remove grey area and create sort of rules that are, one, can be understood and adhered to by the players, so they can actually play to the way that the lawmakers intend the game to be, and secondly is for the is for the supporters to understand and the flow of the game not to be stopped. So if you can't tell the difference between what's accidental and what's deliberate, then there's clearly something to look at there. I believe it would have been about a settling in period. It'd be interesting if they called around the clubs, do you think that you've had enough time to settle in? What do you want to do now? Because it was there for the benefit of, I would have thought, for its infancy. But it would be worth the call, I would have thought. But
how would you answer that phone call?
I'm not going to be doing the AFL job for them. We got too many jobs to do here. I reckon. Yeah, I don't think we need the warning anymore. With the 30 second clock on the scoreboard and enough understanding of what your responsibilities are, I don't think we need the warning.
So treat it like the centre square.
Yeah. There's still some rules that have been there for a long time that I think are a little bit greater. We could adjudicate a bit better, but I do feel for the umps because the sliding one is one obviously that came up during the weekend, and it affected us because not only was it the free kick that went against us, but the misinterpretation or the confusion in the rule, meant that a younger player of ours who thought that he was not taking advantage and threw the ball back to his teammate got penalised 50 metres on top of that. So it cost us a goal, and it was one of those swinging sort of moments that that can affect the game and win against us. But I suppose that's I'll leave others to have opinions around that.
So the origins of it was sliding, which was judged to be a dangerous act, and there were case studies of that, and then it morphed into contact below the knees. Is there a wisdom in just going back to how it was conceived, that forward momentum taking out the legs of an opponent rather than what seems to be as players are running in to ensure that there's contact to their lower legs in no manner that's dangerous to milk the free kick?
Yeah, once again, you can't tell the difference between what's deliberate and what's accidental, so it makes it pretty tough to adjudicate. Can you imagine an umpire's position in that regard when, before the contact below the knees rule came in, we had absolutely zero contact to the head, which was going to lead players, which led players to actually go into ground rules with their head directly in contact with whoever was coming out, whichever opposition players coming the other way. It was a real easy way to get a free kick, to actually go in with your head exposed and run into the legs of an opposition player. So you put those two things together over the course of the last sort of 10 or 12 years. I think that recipe was pretty easy to work out, that there was going to be some issues at some point and there was going to be flash points. And we have seen it periodically over the last 4 or 5 years since the sliding rule has come in. So I don't think anyone's sitting around surprised that we're having discussions about it.
Is there a way out of it?
Yeah, you prioritise which one's more important to you, the head contact and potential trauma, or the leg contact and potential trauma, because I don't think you can have both.
And you'd lean to the?
Well, I think you want to protect the head, but at the same time, I thought when that rule came in, when it came in so cut and dried, I think head trauma was probably going to be worsened, because you're going to have players that lead with their head. You'd like to think that players need to protect themselves rather than running around thinking that they need to be protected by the rules. So we're at danger of creating a generation of players that that were going to lead with their head, but not so at the moment, Jared, because they might actually collect someone when they're legitimately trying to win the ball under the knee, and then it'd be a 50-50 decision on where the umpire sees it at that point in time, which is not really what we want in the game, I wouldn't have thought.
No, I've got to let you get to the review. Thanks for your time, Bucks, and good luck heading towards Friday night.
Thanks, Jared.
Nathan Buckley with a look back on the weekend that was. So where are you on the scale of joy, satisfaction, aggravation, rage this Monday morning? 1-300-736-736, the Eagles are the one seed. Is Melbourne being a good team just an idea? Is it an out-of-date idea? The joy of Queensland footy. How does Carlton go by comparison with that? 1-300-736-736. Your calls this Monday morning. You can text 0433-98-1116. David King will run the Monday means test shortly, but have your say first. And a special announcement, a major announcement around what's going to happen with our coverage of horse racing and the final day of Winx after the break.